Well, welcome to the first ever Ask Without Fear birthday party call. I'm so glad you guys are here. Let's have a woohoo! Can you all do that? All right. That was kind of tepid, but thank you for the people that joined in. That's good. Why don't we go around sort of the virtual room, and if you could say what your name is, what organization you represent, and where geographically you're located, that would be great. And I'll start. I'm Mark Pittman. I'm up in Waterville, Maine, and I'm the author of Ask Without Fear.
I'm Paula Shoecraft. I'm with OMB Watch, and I'm in Washington, D.C.
Welcome, Paula.
I'm Christina Karen. I'm with St. Joseph Healthcare up in Bangor, Maine.
Yay for Maine!
I'm Ann Jolly, and this is Allison Cuvion. We're in sunny Greenville, South Carolina, and we work for Christ Episcopal Church.
Yay, South Carolina!
I'm Kate Lee. I'm in Atlanta, and I'm a corporate philanthropy consultant. On my own, I should add.
Welcome, Kate.
Hi, my name is Shamik Bose, and I work at the Gay and Lesbian Center in Development in New York City.
All right, New York City. Whereabouts in New York?
In Manhattan, in the Village.
Okay, in the Village, cool. I used to live on Long Island, and I miss being able to take the railroad into New York City.
Hi, I'm Mila Gallegos. I'm from Los Angeles, California, and I'm CEO of Educational Program Development for Students in the United States and around the world. And here I am.
Wonderful. So we've got both coasts very well represented. Did anybody else join in that time?
I did. This is Wade Kelly. I'm with the Director of Development for the Partnership for Families, Children, and Adults in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yay! Good to hear your voice, Wade.
Thanks.
So, everyone, this is wonderful. We may have some people coming in as we go, but what I wanted to do for this call was because it is a birthday party celebration, you kind of get to tell about the baby a little bit at a birthday, at least when the kids are young. I want to just give you the backstory on why I wrote Ask Without Fear, and then I want to review some of the basics in there, because I firmly believe that those of you who have heard me speak know that one of the analogies I use is watching the NBA teams, the National Basketball Association teams, do practices. You go to one of their practices, and they're doing layups. They're doing some of the most basic moves for basketball, and there are these incredibly well-paid professional athletes, and that's because the basics are what help you win games. If you can get those down habitually, you have a higher chance of winning games. Well, I want to go over the basics, review the basics that are in the book. It won't be a lengthy review, but I think times like what we're in right now with this economic downturn is helping us realize that maybe some of the basics we thought we had nailed down weren't as firmly nailed down as they could have been. Then I want to just start talking about fundraising in a recession. I have some ideas. I want to hear what your guys' experiences have been with the organizations you're with. I know some are well-established, some are less well-established, or newer. They're just as good. They're just newer. And I've got some ideas on things to do and avoid. And share with some of the experiences that we're having here in Maine also, because in addition to doing fundraisingcoach.com, I think all of you know that I also am a full-time development person for Inland Hospital in Waterville, Maine. So I'm in the midst of this, too, with all y'all. Did I get it right, Kate? Was that in Ann and Allison, was that a good Southern, all y'all?
You go, baby!
You guys would have that in Tennessee, too, right, Wade?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Good. Well, all right. And if you have any questions, please feel free to interrupt me. I'd love to make this as interactive as possible. But for the backstory, one of the things, I got about 2003, I got here back to Maine, moved back up from Long Island, New York to Maine, and went out to Franklin Covey, got certified as a Franklin Covey executive coach, and started doing fundraisingcoach.com. Doing fundraising consulting primarily with Maine organizations, and still getting to do some of the speaking around the country. But as I was in Maine, I found that there were a lot of organizations that had wonderfully passionate volunteers, but no resource base. in the midst of all that, for all the years that I've been fundraising before moving back here, I'd always said, I just love fundraising, but I can't teach people. It must be a congenital birth defect. And then when I got up here and was on my own, a community college asked me if I could teach people how to do fundraising, and all of a sudden I said, sure. I'd be glad to try to teach people. I knew my family needed to eat, so it was amazing how my response to that question changed really quickly. And out of that came a 24-hour course of, I called it the Nonprofit Fundraising Institute, everything from Fundraising 101, different types of fundraising, to how to ask for money, a second one, how to ask for money. It's specifically focused on handling objections. What do you look for in a capital campaign? How do you train your board? They're all listed at the training slot on fundraisingcoach.com. But in the midst of doing that, I realized, wow, this stuff can be taught, and there are plenty of people that are eager to learn it. Concurrently with that, I was doing – has anybody here done a feasibility study?
Yeah.
No.
Wow, the lack of energy in that, yes. But I was working with other people and doing proposals for $20,000, one or two-month feasibility study for an organization, and had this one organization that was totally passionate about their cause. They'd been around for 60 years. They had never raised more than a $500 gift. That was their major gift. And they wanted to raise $3 million. To purchase the facility that they'd always had their services in. And I sat around the board, and they're just about to approve. I had been a guest at their board meetings for months. They really trusted me. I liked the organization. And they were just about to approve a $20,000 expenditure to hire me to do a feasibility study. And I said, just before they pulled the trigger, I just said, wait, can I just say one thing? And they all kind of were startled, and I said, sure. I said, I can think of one really good reason to not approve this expenditure. I said, could you please answer me honestly, all of you going around the table, if we do this feasibility study, spend the next month or 2 months talking to your best donors, talking about the strategic vision for this organization, if we do this and I come back to you at the end of that month or 2 months and say, I think you need to spend 2 to 3 years developing a major gift program so that you're developing $1,000 and $10,000 givers on an annual basis. Would you say, thank you, Mark, shake my hand, and then go off and do this capital campaign anyway? And almost to a person around the table, including the chair, they all said, yeah, we do it anyway. We think the time is right, and we're going to do it. And I said, well, if that's the case, I would vote against hiring me for 20 grand. I'd hire a marketing firm or a PR firm, because you're just going to waste our time and money if you're not going to take the counsel that will come out of the feasibility study you're investing in. At that point, anybody who's worked on their own knows that you don't need to turn down a paying client for the most part, especially when you're trying to get off the ground. But that experience taught me that there were a lot of passionate people that were just ready to get out there and get working. So between that and the organizations that couldn't afford to hire me, I kept looking for an alternative way to do the training. Because we already have the Fired Up Volunteers, which is, for those of us who live in a development office, we want to find those fans, those Fired Up Volunteers. But for so many organizations, that's all there is fans and Fired Up Volunteers, and there's not really any structure. So that's that. All that came together to birth the book that became known as Ask Without Fear. Some of you were helped with the title votes that I was having throughout there, and it's been really cool. I'm coming to the end of my waxing nostalgic stage, just in case you guys are bored. Over the course of 1 year already, there's over 1,000 copies out there, and there are people all over the world that are benefiting from it. So it's been very gratifying to see that take shape. And I know that all of you have a copy, because you're on this call, and you got in with the secret password after figuring out which was the second paragraph. Sorry, I wasn't more explicit with that. So that's the backstory, that's why the book is really slim. For some people, it may be a surprise to get a book that feels so slim in their hand, but it was because passionate volunteers don't have a lot of time to read a book, and because a lot of the books that were out there seemed to be delight in confusing people. It's very hard to keep, if you know fundraising, it's very hard to keep it simple because you want to go into all the different caveats and all the different other things that you should be doing. For me, I kept wanting to go into direct mail, and I kept wanting to go into website stuff, and I kept wanting to go into other forms of fundraising. But I had to keep getting pulled back to, no, this is to help people ask for major gifts face-to-face and help them get feeling comfortable. The vision I had, the dream I had for it was someone would pick it up in an airport in Portland, Maine, fly to L.A., and have read the whole book and be ready to hit the ground running when they got to L.A. And I mean Los Angeles, not Lewiston, Auburn, Maine, for those of you who know Maine. So that's the end of my waxing nostalgic. Want to review the steps. Can you guys all tell me the steps of the base that form the basis for Asking Without Fear? Either I lost everybody on the call or you're not looking right now. What's the phrase that I use when I'm doing my training?
Real.
Get real. Very good. So, and what are the four steps?
Well, I'm remembering research, engage, ask, and love, right?
Yay! Who was that?
Paula.
Yeah, right. You got it all. So, and for me, that was just an easy way to, they're all, none of this is new. This stuff has been around for decades now. But that was my way of helping people remember the essential steps. And in economic times like ours, I think, yet again, this is just, it's important to revisit these. Researching means researching both the cause and the prospect. So first of all, researching how much money you're trying to raise, how many gifts will that take to get there, how feasible does it look like given the history of your looking at that organization in Maine. I knew that if their major gift had been a $500 gift, even if we asked 10 times that, that would only be $5,000 and wouldn't be anywhere near the top of the top gift needed for a $3 million campaign. So I knew they needed to do some growth. And as far as I know, they never purchased the building. It's been 5 or 6 years. And so whatever, they must have worked out some sort of agreement with the city and with the owner because they're still having their performances there, fortunately. But doing the research means you're doing due diligence. So you know it also gives you the roadmap to where you want to go. How are you going to accomplish the goal, the fundraising goal that you set out? But it also is research on prospects using Google, using all the, and you, if you have the funds to do WealthPoint type analysis and finding out what are you do ratings with your board. I talk about the CPI rating in the book where you score on capacity, philanthropic and interest. Or do they have the capacity to give? Are they philanthropically inclined, and are they interested in your organization? Engaging is just getting to know them, and it can be over one coffee during the ask, or it can be over a course of a few months. Some of us have more lead time, more cushion time. Some of us need the funds right now, and the engage step needs to be quickly executed. But it's just as important to find out if the donor even cares and also introduce the donor to the donor prospect to our organization because there are different aspects. We'll have a higher likelihood of getting a yes if we know what may resonate better with them. If we know that they're interested in kids and not geriatrics, we probably won't show them the nursing home here at Inland. We'll probably show them our birthing center, simple things like that. But often we forget that, especially when we're facing the need for increased funds because we just get scared. And we just think, we need the money now. I'm just going to make a big ask. I'm going to make an ask. And you start just kind of shooting blindly. So then the ask, though, out of all the steps, if we don't do the ask, we're not going to get any money. And I want to address that later in the call because I have a feeling that a lot of the doom and gloom and the real hardships that are going on right now are stopping a lot of us from possibly asking. And then the last part of L, or the last part of real is L, which is love. And it's knowing that, remembering that what we're dealing with here is nothing that we deserve. It's something we have to, each gift we have to earn. And each person that we deal with is precious in their own right. They're worth far more than the money that they can give. And we need to treat them like that, even if we don't have to like them or like their answers that they give us. But if we've gone through the engaging and gotten to the asking, chances of us being able to like them afterwards or love them afterwards is going to be easier. But it's a heart and it's a stature that we need to take, a stance that we need to take, because people in our business can often look like we're just in it for the money. We're just treating people like ATMs, and we need to be remembered to be brought back around to the big picture again. Do you guys all have the occupational hazard of not being able to walk past the donor wall? I think I frustrate my wife quite a bit when I walk into a hospital and I see a donor wall. I stop. It's almost like there's this magnet that just kind of stops my internal organs, and I start looking and seeing, do I know these names? And, you know, shocked to find my donors on another, you know, a competitor's wall, and it cracks me up. So I've stopped short of taking pictures. I have wanted to take pictures of some donor walls, ostensibly because the design is so nice, but it's also because I wanted to study it without looking really crass. But I haven't had the courage to do that. Go ahead. What was that?
I've taken a picture.
Have you?
Yeah.
Did anybody call you on it?
No.
That's awesome. Because it's so much easier to study it at your own desk than it is to study it in the midst of a very busy community center. Oh, that's great. Well, so there's the little nostalgic throwback to the book and the short review. Let's just talk about what are you guys experiencing now in your fundraising? We have all sorts of different organizations. We have healthcare, we have education, we have the Gay and Lesbian Center, we have churches, we have, is OMB, is that watching the Office of Management and Budget?
We are, we're a government watchdog, yep, a national.
Okay. So we cover the gambit here. What is it that you guys are experiencing?
Mark, this is Kate. Working with two different nonprofits, one that has an executive director who also functions as the head of fundraising, what we're seeing is reluctance sort of in the mid-range. There's still interest down in what we consider our small gift category, which are teachers primarily, because this is a program that works with teachers, sort of the $25 to $50 gifts. From 50 to up to the many hundreds, people are real reluctant. At 1,000 or more, we're seeing what I would consider in our community philanthropist donors.
How do you mean that?
I sort of call them the serial do-gooders, you know, that they're interested in many causes and they do spread their donations, although they may have one organization that they are associated with primarily or two, a symphony or a hospital, but they continue to give to other causes.
That's a great analysis. I like the serial do-gooders. You might see me tweet that, Kate.
You may reuse it as needed.
Thanks. I've heard that you have to attribute it the first time. It says, Kate Lee says, serial do-gooders. Then the second time you can say, as I've heard it said.
I said.
And then the third time you can say, as I always say, they're serial do-gooders. Cool. What? How about the rest of you? I'm going to start picking on you by name if people don't volunteer.
I would also add one other interesting comment. I recently met someone who is the head of a very, very old foundation here in Atlanta, not one of the really large ones like the Woodruff Foundation, but very consistent giver in the community. And her observation when I asked her, you know, are you seeing a big uptick in requests, you know, unsolicited, she goes, actually the opposite, that a lot of the organizations she would have expected to be sort of casting a wider net don't have a development person or have cut back in that area.
And
she said they aren't capable of getting all the proposals out, which I thought was very interesting. It sort of seemed like the cutting off your nose concept.
Mm-hmm. Are other people experiencing that where as people look to shrink budgets, they're looking at the development function?
Well, I would like to say a couple of things. This is Mila from Los Angeles.
Yes, Mila.
We are a new nonprofit organization that dedicates our time to develop completely different 21st century educational programs that we offer for schools. And what we experienced is that some people don't want to deal with us because we are a new organization and they already have charities that they support, so nobody cares about us. Another problem is we were talking to people that that have kids, teenagers, younger kids, and we asked them if they would be interested in donating so we can offer educational programs to every child because every child deserves it. And the answer was that my kid is going to excellent school, and unfortunately, I don't have money or time to worry about other kids. So
wow.
I had to explain to them that your kid is not in a vacuum. Your kid walks the streets like everybody else. And as long as we have a lot of kids that are not educated, your kid is in danger. Because the kids that are not educated, they're involved in drugs, robbery, violence, anything you could think of. And as long as those kids are there and they have no education, it doesn't matter if your kid goes to excellent school or not, he's still in danger. So we'll see. The speech I made was a couple of weeks ago. We'll see how the reaction is going to be from those.
Hey, what was the initial companies. Reaction? Did that make lights go on? Or
They said, well, yeah, it does make sense, especially when you talk to people from different communities, like Russians, Greeks, people that have small mama's papa's businesses, not big corporations. And they're more like, European structure. They think about as long as their family is doing fine and their child is doing fine, they're giving everything to their kids. They're working hard just to provide their kids with good education and activities, everything they possibly can. But they really don't care about anybody else. And they have that, they're very narrow-minded. So I think
often with education, too, what you find with education, at least in my experience, is that you have so many people that are not used to the culture of giving to education. If they pay tuition, they think that should cover the cost, which there's a good
argument
to be made for that. But so you have to do a lot of education and get other parents involved that are already giving to educate. And that's just schools. But
yes, it's hard because a lot of people, if they work, they don't even know what their kids are doing after school. Do they do their homework? And then on top of everything, in schools, we talk to a lot of kids, different ages. And 90% of them said that we don't care because whatever we learn in school, we should forget anyway after we graduate and we start from the beginning again. So why bother? They don't see that connection between real life and education. And that's where we come in. We actually include everything that has to do from outside. And the way they learn, they see the connection that what you're learning will be used later on, regardless what career you're going to choose. And we even bring people from outside, professionals, that talk about different subjects.
Now, how long has your organization been around? I want to move on to other callers.
Yeah.
How long has your organization been in existence?
We registered in 2006, and 2006, and
cool.
Now we're just developed the programs, and now we got some donations, but it's not even nearly enough for us to actually exist and continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. So we've heard from Kate and Mila. How about y'all in South Carolina? Ann and Allison, what are you guys experiencing in your church life? Are people giving still? Religion tends to be one of the more resilient fundraising areas.
Now, our campaign, our annual campaign this year, is the greatest it has been since 2003.
Nice.
Our capital campaign, whole other story. I would say that it's non-existent would be probably a compliment to it. annual campaign has really blown us away.
And is it a lot more donors from smaller gifts, or is it just people all across the board being more generous?
Yes. All the way around.
Okay.
We had almost 200 parishioners who didn't pledge last year to pledge this year. So our numbers of pledgers are up, our dollars are up, new people stepping in where they hadn't before. The average increase in pledge is almost 17%.
Mm.
It's really been outstanding.
That's tremendous. Especially if you don't look at the capital line item.
Yeah, ignore that completely, and we look great.
That's similar to what we're having here in Inland, although this month it caught up with us a little bit. Our annual fund had been bigger than previous years. And I think it's because you can direct charity care can be a very compelling. People understand that. They can see there are more people that are in need of care that can't pay for it in our communities. But this past month, we were ahead of last year up until this past month, where we now are behind where we were year-to-date last year, because we had a couple of gifts that came in that were results of kind of secondary results of planned gifts that went into our annual fund. So it'll be interesting to see. We have a huge mailing going out next week, which I'll talk about in just a few minutes. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects it. Wade, how about you in Tennessee? I think this is a new organization for you, right?
Yeah, actually, I start there next week.
Okay.
So,
any idea how what are you just seeing in Chattanooga overall? Because you've been there for a little bit now.
I think the smaller gifts are steady and coming in, but I think the larger gifts, people are taking a wait and see attitude. And I think it's there's still a lot of generosity here, but they're being a little more reserved to see where the market goes and how 2009 is going to play out. I still think nobody knows where the bottom is, and until someone can determine where the bottom of this thing is, then I think people just kind of take a wait and see attitude.
Thanks. Yeah, that's definitely one of my board chair is a car salesman. It's just not a lot of cars getting sold right now for companies like Chrysler and Dodge and GM. Those are the dealerships he owns. Shamik, what are you seeing in New York? Did you *6 and mute yourself? Are you there? Well, Shamik, if you come back on, we'd love to hear from you. Paula, what are you seeing in D.C.?
Well, yeah, I was trying to figure out how to formulate my answer. I have very little benchmark data to work with. Our organization, less than 10% is individual giving. It's foundation.
Okay.
And we're new at this, and I'm new at this. I mean, the good news is that it's been a one-person development office, and our board of directors, with a little bit of influx of money, committed to expanding the development to two people for 2 years.
Woo-hoo.
And so this is why I'm also on this call, because like all of this individual giving is new, and we want to really, you know, see if we can make it happen for OMB Watch. I've inherited a group of people that are online givers, and I know very little about them, which is very frustrating to me. They're all across the country. I have some mail-in donors that I know a little bit more about, and again, I was talking about so few, and so I feel like I'm just getting started. But
sure.
I'm hoping that, here's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned that by having two people this year, it's going to take two people just to keep us at where we were last year, and I'm not going to be able to demonstrate to the board the advantage of an extra person just times are tough. I mean, I'm seeing, I can tell you all kinds of stories in the foundation world, and 2010 is likely to be worse.
Right.
Again, I'm new in the individual donor, so I just don't have benchmarks to tell you what we're seeing. I will a year from now.
Now, does your board, it seems in my industry, and I don't know if Christina's seeing this in Bangor too, but in our industry, it seems like the boards understand that it's tough. And I don't know, it seems like there's a little bit more openness to that. Do you think you get that sense from your board too, or is that not?
Oh, very, very definitely. Yeah, we'll wait and see. We have our board meeting on Monday, and so we'll get a sense as to how much has changed in their perception. But yes, they definitely understand. And here's our challenge too with our board. Many of them are nonprofit executive directors themselves. So yeah, they'll definitely understand what's going on.
So the good news is they understand what's going on. The bad news is they may not have the capacity to make up the difference either.
Yeah. You caught that underlying.
Oh, loud and clear. Okay, and Shamik or Christina, are either of you still on the call?
This is Christina. We have a really unique situation where we're fairly, our development office has been in place by name for years, but in theory for really 2 years. We're going on our second year of actually doing development work. And so we have a great tradition of our employees being the foundation of our giving, which is very, very strange. It's great, but it's a very unique situation where the majority of the money that comes in every year is from our own employees. So we are just now really starting to hit the road with asking for gifts. And last year we did kind of a shot in the dark community mailer for the first time ever, asking the community to give. So we're definitely looking to build on that this year. And we are just gearing up for our annual golf tournament is our major fundraiser every year, where I guess that is our community ask in a sense. And we've just started to get going with that with sponsorships, and frustratingly we've had the first few answers back be the people that have consistently donated the larger amounts say, we are not giving any money to any sponsorships this year because of the economy. So we're a little frustrated. We're kind of looking to see where we can cut costs because it is a high-cost event, looking to see how we can get creative with those sponsorships. But overall, it's just a really unique situation that we don't have a lot to we have a lot of room to grow, so that's the good thing.
It was the same with our hospital. We had a part-time person for the first few years, and then I came 4 years ago and was moved it from. She was really good at events fundraising, which you all know cost a lot to get. You know, it usually costs about 50 cents on the dollar to raise. It's a legitimate form of fundraising, and it's necessary for organizations, and especially if you factor in community relations aspects and media aspects. But we're finding with our big event that we started just 3 years ago, last year was the best year so far, which shocked us because it's a symphony orchestra comes down from Bangor to Waterville. And it was right when a lot of the stuff was hitting, but people were still really generous. This year, we're finding we need to step up with more musicians to actually make it a full POPs program, which we've advertised for the last 3 years but haven't had a full POPs program, so we need to step that up. But we too are finding a lot of the major donor sponsors trying to kind of take a wait-and-see approach, like Wade was saying, and what you're experiencing too. One last time for Shamik, and then I'll move on. You still on the call? Okay. Oh, are you? Okay. Well, I think this is fairly typical. What you guys are experiencing is fairly typical for what a lot of people are experiencing with the small gifts are coming in. So part of my advice would be to make hay while the sun's shining. If the small gifts are still coming in, figure out what's working for you in that and make sure you're continuing to do that. What we're doing here at the hospital, those of you who have read my recession-proof fundraising, which is at fundraisingcoach.com in the article section, know that I tried to be strategic with my annual fund mailings in 2006 and 2007 and really cut them down from 10,000, 14,000 mailings per mailing to about 3,000 based on we had some scoring done on our database to see who was most likely to give an annual gift. And so I thought I was being really smart because I was saving 1,000 or two. And it turned out we dropped our annual fund 30%. And it's nothing to, because it's so new here at the hospital, our annual fund isn't anything to write home about. Right now we're at about 17,000 for the year that started. Our year started October 1st. We're at 25,000. But last year we started doing more mailings just to the general people, even never givers, which I've always been a fan of, just kind of if they never give, they're never going to give, so don't mail them. That had been my mantra until last year when we started doing that again, and found that, by and behold, our annual fund went up from, I think it was 17,000 for the first couple of years, for 2006 and 2007, it went back up to over 30,000 for the year last year, and it looks like we're definitely on track to do that again this year, which is growth for us. So what we're doing right now is here's one of the things that hopefully each of you can put into use, is using holidays and national honorary weeks as triggers for your fundraising, because most of us, I think, are feeling that we're caught with, we feel the pinch ourselves, or we see the people that haven't had sales calls or haven't had a sale on their store for 6 months, or we're talking to them, and so we can start believing the bad press. And it's real for those people that we're talking to. But it's really important that we don't pre-qualify every donor. That we, I've still been seeing organizations that are stopping fundraising. And they're kind of sitting, they're taking the wait-and-see approach that a lot of our donors are taking. Well, our donors are in a position, a different position, because that's a charitable gift that they're taking a wait-and-see approach about. We don't have that option, because by and large, our organizations depend at least in part on the funds that we raise. So taking a wait-and-see approach doesn't work for us. And we have to just continue to remind ourselves to not pre-qualify people. Just because some industries and most industries appear to be having a hard time doesn't mean all industries are. If you know anybody that is in the surplus and salvage, we have some surplus and salvage stores here called Martin's. I believe they're probably doing pretty well because people are bargain hunting. If you know anybody that works for discount retailers, that would probably be the same case. Yes, did somebody want to jump in?
No. I have to respond. Sorry.
So there are industries, and healthcare continues to expand. Defense is still being, we're still in combat in two countries. So there are still industries that may have some upsides. I know a guy that's making money in the stock market right now. I haven't been smart enough to ask him how, but apparently he's got some bank stocks and they're going up. Apparently some of those, and I'm not sophisticated enough to know that, but I do know that he's one of our major donors this year because of the money that he's making on the stock market. That's something to be looking for. What I was going to say about the national holidays, though, is May 6th through the 12th, I think, and May 10th through the 16th for healthcare are big holiday weeks, it turns out. May 6th through the 10th is National Nursing Week, and May 10th through the 16th is both the National Hospitals Week and National Nursing Homes Week. I think probably every day is spoken for. Every day there's probably a National Something Week or a National Something Day. And so if you can find out the ones that fit your organization, you could probably do some sort of mailing or fundraising event based on that. And that would be just another excuse of getting the message out in front of people. The second or third kind of takeaway I wanted to give you guys through the call is being sure that you're developing your nonprofit story well. The stuff that worked in the last few years may not be the stuff that's going to work now. What we're seeing, what I'm hearing as I speak at conferences too, is that people that are giving direct relief and direct support to people that are in different financial situations than they were a year and a half ago, those are the ones that have a more compelling story often. But on the other side, what I'm hoping to see again, but what we saw last year, or a lot of hospitals saw last year with their galas, is that there's also a providing an escape is a value for people. So if you can provide an affordable escape by having some sort of gala that's maybe less glitzy than in the past, but still a special night out, that still has that escapist sort of escape from reality sort of feel that a lot of people value and are glad for. I guess a couple other things I wanted to put in, because we're I'm shocked to see that we're already at quarter of one, and I'll hang out as long as you guys want me to, but the recording part will end right around one. We're also seeing that, as I've been doing my statistical analysis, solicitation cycles are taking a lot longer. Are you guys experiencing that too?
Yes.
It used to be a couple of years ago, it used to be I just had to make a call. Hey, we got this event coming up. Will you be the sponsor again this year? Yeah, sure, no problem. And two things are happening. Corporations are getting savvier at their philanthropy, thanks to people like Kate. And so they're quantifying and creating different hoops to jump through because they're having to be more strategic in their giving. So some of the corporate funds that were pretty readily available before, they may still be readily available, but they don't feel like it when you're in the development office chair. The other thing is people just, like Wade was saying, are taking a wait-and-see approach. They don't know what's going to happen next or where their assets are going to be. I just had some donors here last week that I think their retirement nest egg, and they've been retired for over a decade, has dropped 50%. And they were heavily leveraged in Bank of America. And so they saw tremendous losses in that. And those people just aren't going to be in the same position. Even if they're better off than they were 10 years ago, they don't feel better off than they were because they've seen their accounts having gone up and now they're going down. So,
do you have suggestions for that audience, Mark? This is Paula, because I would guess 99% of all of us, from small donors to large, are experiencing that. And you know, how do you deal with donors like that?
Well, part of it is one of the things I'd love to hear what other people think on that too. For what I was shocked with that particular interaction because they're planned givers. We're in their estate. One of the few families we know of that have us in their estate. So I had written a note to them 2 or 3 weeks ago, saying out of the blue, just saying, you know, I don't thank you nearly enough that you've made the most important. You've included us in your most important life decision, and I just wanted to thank you. And then the next week. Came around time for, and it was just a sheer thank you. All the other thank yous I'd been doing over the last 4 years were thank yous. Oh, and it's time for this event. Would you donate to this event? And in addition to your planned gift. So this was just a sheer, I am so glad, and it means so much to our organization to know that you've kept us in your estate plans. But what we've done,
and by the way, how's your health?
No, I didn't ask them that. I didn't ask them if we should take the special ops squad, because most of the planned gifts I've experienced, the people that have done that live forever. It's like this weird life insurance policy. If you make a planned gift to a nonprofit, you're going to have eternal life, and that gift will never mature. But with this group, then I asked them if they'd re-up a couple of weeks later. I asked them if they'd re-up their $1,000 gift or sponsorship of the concert that they did last year, and they sat in my office and just told you what I told you. They're, you know, they're just how tenuous just they feel their situation is. 2 days later, they saw my CEO at a local restaurant and said, "Oh yeah, we talked to Mark. We're in for the concert. We're excited about it. You can definitely count on us." So I don't know if my being a listening ear and just saying, "Yeah, I totally understand that, and I don't have a good answer for you," was what they needed at that time. To know that I wasn't going to try to manipulate them into a gift. That was the weirdest experience that I've had so far in this whole thing where I heard them say no, and then they told my CEO, "You can definitely count us in." What are you guys doing to deal with that situation? Because I think Paul's right, that's a lot of people.
I know in Atlanta we've seen with our education nonprofit a lot of people going back and saying, you know, the mission's so important. My world is going to turn around. I'm helping children who have, you know, who are on Title I funds, who use the clothing closet at the school to get, you know, school clothes to come every day. It's important for me to eke out that a little bit more so I can continue to give. So, and it goes back to your who's hurting most message, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. And the hurt is being felt by our neighbors now. It's not just those people that live in a certain section of town. In the same way, it's people that we can put faces to as well. Ann and Allison, how are you? Are people, even though your annual fund's doing well, are people saying that in regards to the Capitol?
This is Allison. Ann had to step out. You know, I actually have worked specifically on the annual campaign. Ann has been doing a lot with the Capitol campaign, so I think that they really, you know, got a couple people saying that this wasn't a good time to go asking for those big, you know, multi-$1,000 gifts, and we've kind of pulled back a little bit trying to reorganize and figure out the best way for them to kind of rejuvenate that.
Okay.
Short answer is Ann would have better details on that.
That is fine. I think the fourth point I wanted to make in the call, I think, addresses that, is that not only are solicitation times taking longer, I'm having to ask and then follow up much more than I've had to follow up in the past. But I'm also at the stewardship time. If there are three types of communication, they're cultivation, solicitation, and stewardship. The stewardship I'm getting much more aware of. I kind of got lax at that over the last 2 years. But before I even did my last year, this time I had all my sponsorships for my fall event because I started hammering away at those in January. This year, I took the time to wait until the renovation that we're funding in part from last fall's donations. I waited till the sheetrock was flying, and I took some pictures, and I sent everyone who's ever donated or attended the event over the last 3 years a letter. Everybody that donated last year, I said, thank you. We're already putting your money to work. Check out the work we're doing with a big picture with dust and workmen and drywall being torn up. And then for the people that didn't attend or participate last year, I had, thank you for making Fall Pops what it is. Look at what we're doing with last year's money. Because I really wanted to drive the message home with, we're not just putting these in our coffers and just kind of sitting on a fund. This is money that's going into direct patient service now. This is responding directly to the cardiac care needs of our community, and you made that happen. So that I think with our $1,000 donors, we're seeing a lot of people that are still saying, yeah, we're in. It's the 5,000 up donors that I don't know where they're at, but I definitely wanted them to get that stewardship, that report back on, hey, we're using your money really well. I'm also being much more intentional about trying to repurpose things. Our community relations office is a separate office here at the hospital. They do a newsletter that just gets dropped to certain zip codes. So I'm making sure that anybody that's donated in the last 18 months gets a copy of that. I get extras from them, and then I mail them out to people that are outside that zip code range. In a perfect world, I'd mail them to every donor, but it's not a perfect world, and that would cost too much. So I'm mailing them to the donors that aren't in that, and I put a little note in there saying, as a supporter of Inland and Lakewood, we really want you to be in the loop with what we're doing. Here's the latest newsletter. Check out these stories. And I list the stories. I noticed that some of the people on that are like the CEO of the healthcare system all the way to some grateful patients in rural areas. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of feedback we get back from those too.
Hey, Mark, since you you called me out for being the person helping corporations be tighter with their funds, I want to help everybody on the call by saying, you know, that more strategic giving, I think, came really because more companies are paying attention to corporate social responsibility and including their philanthropy as part of their, are we being greener, are we, you know, considering our labor practices, et cetera. Probably the best way to get in front of them with even a golf sponsorship is to also show the community connections that they continue to receive the benefit from. You know, you're going to be playing with so-and-so, or the CEOs of other companies here will be playing. those kinds of ROI, the return on your investment, whether it's a social investment like a sponsorship or investing in a piece of equipment, are just as important.
That is excellent. And from what you're seeing, Kate, because corporate sponsorships was the fifth or sixth thing I wanted to give for the call, is that they haven't gone away necessarily. And they are being, whether it's through the marketing or through the philanthropy ends of the corporation, there are still funds around because corporations still need to get people through their doors and they still need to get visibility. Go for it.
I would almost segment the corporate market in two ways, and not by size. What I'm going to tell you is corporations who are selling, whether consumers or to businesses, still have money. They are probably being more prudent about the placement of those monies. They may tell their marketing or sales department, sure, you can go out and sponsor a hole, but it's coming from your golf budget, from your marketing budget, not from our corporate donations budget. But I would really encourage people to go look at professional services association or companies like law firms and CPA firms and marketing and PR firms, because they're looking to get their partners' capabilities out there. But also, they have not necessarily gotten as smart about their donation dollars, and they're still what I call the partner's piggy bank mentality with a lot of them, which I call the partner or his wife or a spouse or a significant other is involved in a charity, so the organization, whether it's the CPA firm or the law firm, writes a check to that charity or sponsors something because of that affiliation. You got to work it.
That's good. That's really good, because the bigger gifts we're seeing are from law firms right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very much the partners get together and they make a decision and they feel like they're getting the best benefit out of this. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kate. Is there a website that you've got up or a blog that you use that people could go to find more?
No, I really need to do that. And when I do, Mark, I'll let you promote it with me.
Oh, you're so sweet to let me promote it for you.
But the last piece I'd encourage everyone to do is, you know, Chamber of Commerce memberships can seem kind of pricey. Most of them have a nonprofit capability. Go to the things other than the ones where it's all new members. You know, try and get yourself to either seminars or whatever they're doing, because you will meet business decision makers there. You'll also probably meet the guy, you know, who's, you know, trying to sell you life insurance, but you know, that's a turnaround. You can sell to him too.
Well, piggybacking on that, there's some people that have been part of this organization for decades that I hadn't met in 3 years of being in this development office and being an outward-focused development person. I went to my first business after hours in years because when I was pastoring a church, we had always had meetings that conflicted with the business after hours. I went to the first one in January and met three of the people that I needed to meet that were on my high likelihood of giving prospect list for major gifts. We haven't.
I think you were twittering for the meeting.
What's that?
You were twittering for that meeting, even.
I probably was, because I was stuck with our competitor giving a sales spiel about the other hospital and how they're leaving the community won't change the makeup of the community. It was very interesting, and I didn't know where not to position myself. I positioned myself where I couldn't leave gracefully. So, but during that sales pitch, I did get a gift. Somebody, another person that was there, was listening to the sales pitch, and she was getting a little frustrated, and so she wrote a check out to Inland during it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. She had seen it on Facebook, didn't want to do a gift online, so she ended up cutting me a check. And she started tagging her other real estate team members, saying, "Have you given Inland? Have you given Inland?"
The zealous proselyte. You know the word I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that one. Whatever. Yeah,
you need those folks.
So, the final thing, I know we're coming up at one. Like I said, I'll turn off the recording in probably just a few minutes, but I'll stay on the line if you guys have more questions. The final thing I would really ask you to press into along the lines of the Chambers of Commerce is your professional associations. Whether it's, I know for Allison and Ann, they've got the Council of Endowed Episcopal Parishes. For healthcare, there's the Association of Healthcare Philanthropy and the New England Association of Healthcare Philanthropy. There's AFP for Everyone, Association of Fundraising Professionals. They all have membership bases, but they're all establishing outposts also on Facebook and on LinkedIn. They all have presences on Twitter. The Chronicle of Philanthropy has a place on Twitter. Charity Channel has an extensive email list that are free, charitychannel.com. We're usually the only ones that think like us in the organizations we're part of. And we really need to press into developing professional relationships, whether it's across town or across the country, because even when our peers around us that aren't development people are saying, you can't ask that person, have you read the news? Have you seen the economy? We need each other to be able to spur each other on and just saying, well, we can't. If we don't ask, we're making a decision for them. We at least have to give them the respect of making the decision on their own. We can inspire each other and commiserate, too. I know AHP, Mary Stewart from AHP, has set up a monthly free conference call using the number that we're using right now. It's from freeconferencecall.com. And it's just a time for people all over the country in healthcare to get on and saying, okay, it's kind of like a water cooler. All right, what are you seeing? How are you dealing with that? How can we help each other get through this time? Because the organizations that do get through this time are going to be so much stronger. If we can be compassionate with our donors and let them know if we're able to offer them flexibility with pledge payments, they'll know that we were there for them when they needed the flexibility, and they'll have that relationship. If other organizations, not everybody's going to make it through this period, which is in some ways unfortunate. People that are seeing reduced donations for sure are going to have to figure out, you're going to have to sell yourself again on, is this cause worthwhile? Is it worthy of my time and effort? Is it unique enough and significant enough that it needs to be a separate organization, or should we merge with another like organization? A lot of those mergers don't work, but the Chronicle of Philanthropy has been giving articles lately that of ones that do and don't, so there's some good best practice out there. But I think, by and large, most of us are going to want to make a good run for it, and so it's just getting out in front of people more, doing the same stuff, and just like Paula was saying, two people, unfortunately, right now, are probably going to take, it'll probably take her two people to raise what they did with one person, but the capacity they've built in doing that, hopefully their board will be able to see, because they're going to be able to just jump out of the starting gates whenever the bottom does hit and we start turning around. Their capacity will be so much stronger for having done that. So
that's my pitch. Thanks.
So I'm really honored that you guys chose the secret password and from the book to celebrate the happy birthday with me for Ask Without Fear. And could we all go around and just one thing that we'll take away from the discussion today, because it was kind of a free for all. So what do you guys think that you'll be able to take away from this call?
No, I don't think she's in trouble.
I think I'll go back to practically the first thing you said, Mark. This is Kate. Just like the NBA, you got to practice layups. Reminding people, you got to go out there and make the basic ask. Got to be there and find out about the person or the organization before you go in with that ask.
Thanks, Kate.
Well, this is Paula, since we're kind of still newbies at this, and for me, just even figuring out who these people are from all across the country who are donating to us. I want to put a lot more emphasis on research and finding out who they are and what their interests are and how we can move their donations to a higher level. But I think for me, it's, you know, not to pre-qualify, especially for me since I don't know them, and just keep asking, you know, that don't stop asking just because times are tough.
Nice.
Mine would be similar. This is Christina. I would say that when you said that if you don't ask, then you're making a decision for them. I think that's probably the biggest thing that I'll need to remember.
And maybe remind the people that we work with, because I keep forgetting that people don't think like us. And that's why we're hired to the organization. It's job security that not everybody thinks like us, but we may need to help people realize that too.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, I really appreciated you saying
line up the fundraising with a time or a holiday throughout the year. We have, you know, our liturgical calendar that we can jump off of, too. And I've been thinking about it, but I really appreciated you kind of stating that. And I think that will be very helpful for our church setting.
Of all this, all the organizations on the call, I felt when I said it, I thought, you guys have the most... Yeah, you know, most opportunities to use that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Wade or Mila, anything that you guys are going to take away? Well, terrific. Thank you, guys. I'm going to end the recording now. I know that we're on... You can follow me on Twitter, and Kate is one of in my Twitter followers, so you can follow her too. Kate, what's your Twitter name?
Kate A. Lee.
Okay, and I'm Mark A. Pittman. Seems to be a theme.
No relationship between the A's.
Yeah, I know, really, right? Christina, is it all right if I give your Twitter ID?
Yep.
You're C.B. Karen.
Yep, and Karen is C-A-R-O-N. I never had to spell my name until I got married, but...
Is there anybody else? You know, Twitter's a great way to connect. Is there anybody else on Twitter? Well, if you're not, I strongly encourage you to experiment with it and go to Twello.com and search fundraisers so you can follow a bunch of fundraisers and get real-time information as you go through your day.
Yes,
thanks for helping
also,
me.
Oh, I would add, too, the nonprofit tech group, because if you are trying to, as you said, quantify your database, go through your donors, that may be a good group to hook up with to find some people to help you through that process.
Super. And you can just Google that. They're very well-coded. They come up well. So thank you for helping me make the first birthday for Ask Without Fear really special. Hopefully we'll do this in a year. And remember that I've got a lot of free information right at fundraisingcoach.com as well. I'm going to turn off the recording, and then we'll go on with the rest of the call. Hold on.